Hey y'all, welcome to another episode of Soccer for Us. I'm Bart, and on this episode, we are going to talk about a lot of the news that has surrounded U.S. soccer in the past month since we've last chatted, talking about new competition formats, talking about new players committing to the U.S. national team, talking about some investigative reports done. But most importantly, on this episode, we are talking about the March 2023 CONCACAF Nations League roster that dropped earlier today. This is going to be an important set of games because the U.S. would like to qualify for the CONCACAF Nations League finals in June, and we'll get to why that's important in a little bit. So to talk about this all with me, I have someone who is actually the most qualified person to do the U.S. soccer sporting director job. It's U.S. keeper Thomas, as the most qualified person for that job. How are you?
Good. I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm still waiting for my call. I think they'll trickle through at some point, but my phone's ready for any call the U.S. wants to send my way for that.
Hey, at this point, we're all candidates, right?
Yeah, apparently so.
And also joining me is someone who was Berhalter out before all of this drama broke. It's Caleb Cook from USMNT Corner. Caleb, good to have you back here. How are you?
Man, it's good to be back. Thanks for having me. Excited to talk about some U.S. men's national team news that actually matters instead of just rehashing things from 30 years ago and mommy-daddy issues and all that other jazz.
Yeah, well, certainly
ready to talk about some players.
Yeah, I know you certainly have been dealing with mommy daddy issues as a coach of a youth soccer team recently, right?
Oh Lord, it trickles into the high school ranks as well.
It certainly does. It certainly does. First, real quick, I just want to point out: congrats to the six CONCACAF nations heading to the 2023 World Cup. You've got USA, Canada, Costa Rica, Panama, Haiti, and Jamaica. You may notice that none of those six teams are Mexico. So congratulations to the six teams from CONCACAF going. Still confused why Mexico is not. But before or after that, let's talk about actual U.S. soccer things. So the biggest news before this roster broke was that Alejandro Zendejas has chosen to be a U.S. men's national team player for the rest of his career. Thomas, this is big, right? Like, this is a good thing that we just, you know, won a recruiting war, if you will, against Mexico for a very highly rated prospect.
Yeah, I think it's a nice move. He provides additional depth. You know, in my opinion, he overtakes Arroyo and Morris at the position for sure, and it does kind of set the tone for other dual national Mexican players and seeing how that, you know, we've lost a lot of those recently to Mexico. So it's good to kind of win one for that perspective, but he's a talent and it's going to be nice to see him in camp and hopefully he gets an opportunity to get a start and show what he's able to do. Cause I like the depth that he provides.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. He did make the Nations League roster that we'll talk about in a little bit. But Caleb, I think Thomas just brought up a good point of like, I don't know if he's going to be a starter in the grand scheme of like your best 11, right? But he's certainly better than Morris and Roldan, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. People were, getting really argumentative on Twitter for no reason about like, everybody's getting excited. Stop being excited. He's not a starter. Like, who cares if he's a starter or not? This is clearly, he's a talented kid who just chose the U.S. men's national team and he adds actual depth. Talented depth.
Right.
I think he makes our pool deeper. I think he's going to come in and he's going to push guys. They can't sit comfortably knowing they're in a starting position with him underneath them because he's going to push them. And I like what we've seen from him. I think he's kind of a creative type winger. My thing is, it's not a bad thing. So why are we trying to make it negative, Peeps?
Right. I mean, I think this is just a positive overall. We got a dual national commit. He's pretty talented, and we'll get to see him for the second window in a row now here in March. Next piece of news, or maybe it's no news. Obviously, we do not have a new head coach. We also don't have a new sporting director. Those searches are still ongoing. Obviously, it seems like one, the sporting director will have to be in place before the head coach is. And then two, you know, we're just not quite sure what the I think budget is the right word for the coaching search and the kind of the limitations on that. But the question now is, you know, do you think that Anthony Hudson can guide us successfully through these two matches and get us to the finals of the CONCACAF Nations League in June?
Yeah, I mean, I think he can just based on talent alone. I think that's really what's gonna, you know, get the U.S. you know through these two matches and get the results they need to move forward. The talent alone. I mean, there's, I mean, the system's the same, you know, pretty much. And I just think they're beatable teams no matter who's coaching the team. Honestly.
Yeah, we've got Grenada away and then El Salvador at home. Caleb, we saw us draw El Salvador 1-1 last summer in a monsoon of sorts. You like our chances even with Anthony Hudson as the coach?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with Thomas there. I think talent's going to win out. I mean, this is an extremely talented group. You know, first opportunity to show for the colors, for the stripes, you know, stars and stripes rather, for a while. And I think the guys are going to come in, they're going to be ready. And yeah, I think, you know, you throw whatever system you want. I just don't see, us tripping up, especially like, let's talk about the difference between a World Cup qualification and, you know, lower stages of CONCACAF Nations. Like, it's not bringing the same heat, right? It's going to be different games. We've seen some of these CONCACAF nations in qualifying, and they play just, I mean, completely different than, say, a friendly or in a Gold Cup. Like, it's just, there's not as much riding on it. They're not playing as hard. It's different. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. It's different, and I think we're going to roll through. And I don't know if we're going to learn a lot about Anthony Hudson, about, you know, who he is as a manager, about how he likes to play, because the opposition is just not there.
Yeah, and to reiterate, the sporting director, this is what U.S. Soccer said, they want to hire the sporting director before they hire a head coach. We have not really made any headway on the sporting director hire. Peter Vermes said no. He just actually signed a contract with Sporting Kansas City through 2028. Ernst Tanner, who's the sporting director Philadelphia Union, turned down an interview. The Nashville general manager, Mike Jacob, turned down an interview. But Caleb, the guy who apparently is still a candidate and still in contention is Oguchi Onyewu. How do you feel about that?
Well, first I'd like to say, you know, a lot of people turning things down. It's almost like the USSF is a dumpster fire at the moment that no one wants anything to do with. So that's great. But I mean, as far as Gooch, I don't have an issue with it. I think, you know, Hercules Gomez, he shed some light on it and kind of had a different perspective. And I think it was an important perspective because, yeah, Gooch has kind of been in with a lot of the boys, right, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he's one of the boys. I think he's got a different perspective. He's not the most qualified, right? That's not shocking news to anybody. But my thing is, you see it all the time, the sports world and the professional world. People who don't have experience aren't necessarily the worst person for the job. If you don't have experience, it's because you don't have experience. And the only way to get it is to get it, right? It's one of those weird things. We see it all the time, right? You graduate with a degree and you can't get a job because you don't have the experience. It's because you've been in school, right? I think he's young. He might be a bit more of what we're looking for, and we just don't know it. So I don't know. I'm not one of those that I'm fully against it. I'm also not one that says, yeah, let's do it just to do it. I think we got to hire some people, but that requires people to say yes to the interview in the first place.
Yeah, I think it's okay to be a little wary of hiring another former player. But I do think that Ernie Stewart was not the problem. And if anything, he was very beneficial to U.S. soccer during his time there. But Thomas, it does feel like this is a very precarious position to fill. It seems like the duties of the sporting director of U.S. soccer don't really align with the duties of what someone, all these chief sporting officers that are turning down the interviews. It seems like what they're doing at the club level doesn't really match what you would be doing for the Federation. I mean, can you kind of explain why you think that these guys are saying no? I mean, it certainly can't just be because the job itself is like a bad job, right?
No, I don't. I mean, the job's undefined. I mean, they said it. They're redefining the job, the position, you know, whether I need a GM. So to me, it's in flux. And so if I'm any of these, if I'm any of these individuals, you know, again, they're all, you know, domestic right now that we're hearing about. I'm a little wary of what that is. I'm a little wary of what the expectation is, you know, going into a very critical World Cup for the country, yeah. You know, exposure, there's more into it. I mean, obviously we want to finish well, but there's more into that. There's a growth and building of the whole process involved there. And I think that's a tough task for anyone to have. And I think whoever it is, unless there's someone, you know, that has, you know, is with, you know, great leader, you know, along the way, I think they're going to have to surround themselves with strong people to help them through this and grow that. And even Ernie, you know, could have done, you know, that as well. I mean, he had certain experience, but that's what's going to make it successful. The coaches they put around them, the people they put around them to be able to do that for that success. So I don't think they're just ready for that. I think right now they're saying it's kind of like we're starting at scratch again. You know, yeah. maybe if things were a little bit different after the World Cup, you know, maybe some of those candidates say yes, but Vermees has turned down the U.S., you know, several times in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years for different positions. So, you know, he may know something that that we don't. So,
well, I think to Kayla's point, it's not like this is a job that screams "come take me," right? Because I think it's very okay to say that the job of sporting director of a federation does not have as much direct involvement with soccer on a day-to-day basis. You are so far removed from actually dealing with soccer because, for one thing, the two, maybe three direct reports you have, right, for whatever it's going to be, even their teams don't play every day. They don't play every weekend. You know, it's like you've got men's and women's camps every week, every month, but, like, you know, outside of that, they're not really doing a whole lot. You have youth camps every so often, but again, it's not like they're playing weekly. You're not doing the actual scouting, right? That's not your job. So you are doing a lot of politicking, of managing people who manage programs, right? Like, if you're the chief officer of this side of the thing, I mean, you're very unlikely to be out there working with, you know, observing a training session necessarily. And that's what a lot of these guys like to do. I think that's kind of where the problem is, that this job is more administrative than what they're probably used to from their day-to-day soccer lives. And they like soccer. That's why they have that job. So this may be seen as like a not as soccer job for them. That's just how I look at it.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's spot on too on that, because they want to be in, you're right, they want to be involved. And that's more the GM role, where I think if that position existed, then maybe, you know, or exists or continues existing, then maybe that's more something in line to it directly associated with the men's national team, as opposed to the overarching, you know, right, of all the teams, you know, underneath them. And so,
is that that GM role, which, as you and I, Thomas, have kind of talked about, it's kind of over the senior national team, but not really. It's mostly over those youth programs, Caleb. Like, even then, it's certainly probably not going to pay as well as doing that at the club level. And it still might not be as hands-on and transformative as you would want to be, as you could be at the club level.
I think it's a combination, or a little bit of everything, right? You've got this negative light that shined on the USSF right now. You've got the removal from the day-to-day soccer. Like, I'm a high school coach. I wouldn't want to be an AD because I want to coach. It's who I am. And, you know, Vermees might not want to step into a position. Yeah, I'm just throwing his name out there. But there's all these different aspects to it. And then to Thomas's point with, you know, Vermees turning down so many things so often, maybe he knows something we don't know. Maybe there's – maybe it's worse than we realize, which is, frankly, extremely scary because I feel like it's pretty bad.
Yeah, there is a lot of uncertainty with the program, especially on the men's side. The women's side, too, is, you know, I think much more settled, but, you know, you're still looking at a future that is going to require you to adapt to a lot of teams that are doing soccer development better than we are. So it's a very unsettled job at this point. Something that is settled, however, we have two U.S. women's national team friendlies in April. They will be taking on Ireland in Austin on April 8th, and then again taking on Ireland on April 11th in St. Louis, the first U.S. soccer match ever in that new venue, which looks fantastic. 22,500 down there in the heart of St. Louis. Ireland is a World Cup team, so that at least is a positive. You're getting warmed up against a team that is going to the World Cup. But two friendlies for the U.S. in April. We obviously know that we have the Women's World Cup this summer, July through August. But then after that, we have a brand new women's competition that CONCACAF has finally finalized. We knew about this, that it was coming, but they have given us a format. And it's pretty awesome. The CONCACAF W Gold Cup, it will be a 12-team tournament. The final tournament is 12 teams. There's a lot of preliminary rounds to it. But it'll be from February 20th through March 10th in 2024. The big news is that this will be a FIFA window. Those dates may sound familiar because that's when kind of the She Believes Cup is. FIFA expanded the window so that this entire tournament will be inside of a FIFA window, meaning that clubs will have to release their players for it. That is a huge benefit for this tournament specifically because, you know, not all of our players, but we do have a couple who play in Europe. A lot of Canadian players play in Europe. Both the best players for Jamaica and Haiti are European based for their clubs. So that's a big win. But we have 12 teams, 4 from South America. That's cool. 8 from CONCACAF. The United States auto qualifies because we won last summer's CONCACAF Women's Championship. We'll have 3 groups of 4, quarterfinal, semifinal, and final. But the question is, like, why does this matter? And it comes down to the fact that this is a separate continental championship. This is not the women's championship that is also World Cup qualifying and Olympic qualifying. This is its own thing. It doesn't overlap with any other competitions. So I think that is a huge step forward, Caleb, for like just not just growing the women's game, but like making it seem like the big deal that it is. And if you're a U.S. women's fan, adding teams like Brazil, Argentina, Colombia, those are big names that now you get to come watch as well.
Exactly. I think that's a big part of it. The 4 teams from South America is huge. Like you said, the big names. You know, Marta is probably not going to be going a lot longer, but I mean, how long has she been?
We don't know how long she'll go. I mean,
yeah. You know, she might be. I mean, look, she can still play. She can still play. But you know what I mean? Like, she's been a big name, a big draw for such a long time. So I think having those teams. Yeah. Is a big draw. And then, like you said, the fact that it's a standalone tournament, it's big for the growth of the game. And, you know, the more competition, the more we can broadcast it, the more it's in people's faces, the better the growth is going to be. I mean, that's the only way, like, that's how you create fans is people can watch it. They can sit in their living rooms. Kids can sit in their living rooms and they can watch it. That is how fans are developed. And if it's not on TV, if there's no competition, there's less of it, right? I mean, it's pretty simple. And I think I think it's great. Anytime they can play, I tune in. I don't care if it's a friendly. Like, I'm a soccer nerd. Like, we're all soccer nerds, right? If it's soccer, we're watching it. So I'm pretty pumped about it. I'm pretty excited about it.
Now, we don't have a host chosen yet. It wouldn't surprise me if it's in the U.S., but we'll learn about that later. One thing I do feel very confident about, from looking at the graphic, we will probably have another insanely large cup trophy to give to the winners. And I think that's also very important, Thomas.
Well, of course it is. I mean, the standard's there, and Caleb's right. I mean, this stuff needs to be ingested. It needs to be available. I mean, my daughter, she wants to watch women's sports. She wants to cheer them on. And every time I'm watching, she goes, well, what about the girls? I say, well, they're not on. You know, and so and said, when they're on, I'll watch them. And so, and I think you have to have the same standard. You have to have the same, because their interest is there. And so you have to draw it when it's not a World Cup. You got to pull the fans in when it's not just a World Cup. And I think this is a good stepping stone to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big thing. And obviously the next tournament that we are hosting will be Copa America. I mean, we have a massive opportunity for the U.S. to qualify for Copa America, because we do not get a guaranteed spot. We are hosting it in 2024. This is coming with some changes to the Nations League format. So let me run through those. They are a little dense, but I'm not going to get into all of it. I'm just going to talk about the stuff that affects the United States. So basically, we're in a CONCACAF Nations League season right now. That's what this roster that just got released is for. We have a final two group stage matches to qualify for the finals of this season, right? That's the best way. The championship of the season happens in June. We're trying to qualify for that. The four teams that qualify for that final will get automatic berths to the quarterfinals of next season. So next season, you will still have 12 teams in League A, plus the four teams that qualify for the final coming up in June. So that's a total of 16. The 12 teams that don't qualify for that final will be put into a group stage. They'll play some matches in September and October. And then November will be a two-legged quarterfinal tie where the top four teams from that group stage will meet the four teams that qualified for this past final, for this upcoming final. If you win the quarterfinal, you qualify for the Copa America 2024. So that's the path that the U.S. has, right? If you don't win that quarterfinal, you still get a play-in match to qualify for the Copa America. It is convoluted. That is the best that I can explain it. It is CONCACAF trying to get as many games and teams involved as possible, as has been their strategy since Montagnani took over. But, Caleb, the important thing is this particular window matters a heck of a lot, because if you qualify for the final of this season, you got a much easier path to get you to the Copa America next summer.
Right. I mean, and that's, I mean, the CONCACAF Nations League, it's important. I mean, every game you're going to try to win, but putting something a bit more for all these games, so there's more riding on it. I think it's just, it's a good thing. And the Copa America, I mean, getting in there, playing the teams from South America, it's just, again, we talk about name recognition, right? For casual fans, when we're talking about broadcast, it's always, how can we get casual fans in there? And when you start throwing in, Argentinas and Brazils, and people's ears perk up because they hear those, they know those. They might not be able to tell you the names on the roster, but they know, oh, these are big teams. You know what I mean? And that's what we're trying to do, that we're trying to draw these guys in. And as far as the players go, competition and putting something more on the game just makes it better.
Yeah.
Makes it more meaningful. The minutes mean more. The running means more. Like, just the actual physical exertion that these players are giving means more. You know what I mean? Like, I'm breaking it down like really, really simple, but that's what it is. It is simple. and it's all a good thing. I'm excited about it. Yeah, it's like you just went through a whole, you know, step by step of.
There are multiple infographics on Twitter if you want to go look at that. But it is there are a lot of flowcharts.
It's crazy, but hey, you know what? It's a lot of soccer, and that is never a bad thing.
Thomas, I think the biggest change and the most important change from the U.S. soccer standpoint is that, again, given that we qualify for the finals coming up in June, which we should. If we don't, we have bigger problems. But the biggest change is that we're not playing those group stage matches in November and September and October, right? Those will be open windows for us and presumably Mexico and Canada, probably Costa Rica as well. They'll be open for us to go play bigger competition. Because I think it's fair to say that, I mean, El Salvador is a perfectly acceptable opponent. Like, they're not a bad team by any stretch. But as we've seen with both iterations, I mean, the U.S. playing Cuba in 2019, 2020, 2021, whatever it was, like, not fantastic competition. Playing Grenada, clearly not fantastic competition. So we are getting out of having to play those types of teams, and no disrespect to them. They're just like, it's hard. There's a clear like drop off after the teams that qualified for the heck or for the octagon last qualification. So the U.S. not having to play those teams, being open to play what's been reported like Germany, right? Possibly being able to go to Europe and play teams. That's a big win for the U.S. soccer team, the players, and the fans, right?
Yeah, it is absolutely. I mean, I'll echo what Caleb said first and say it's important to have these Nation League games mean something, you know, to get to something else. Because to play them is just like, okay, well, all right, we just did the iteration, then we do it again twice a cycle. It's you've got to have a carrot.
It's hard because, like, I care about these games that we're playing in March because I want to care because they matter for the June games. Does that make sense?
Oh, no, they do. And that's but the like, thing.
It's hard to also be super excited to play Grenada. Like,
well, right. I mean, and so essentially when World Cup qualifying was, there's two cycles where there were 18 games. They played essentially the quality of a Grenada or Cuba. You know, I think it was Barbados, one of them, and they killed them like 8-0. Like, yeah. It's not a competition. I mean, it's to build your stats for players, honestly. And so to have that ability now to skip that and to play some European teams or maybe some, you know, Asian or African teams in Europe is important. We've got to have that opportunity to do that. We've got to get to the best opponents we can. And so that alone should be enough to motivate these players so they can have that opportunity and have camps over there and playing on the road and playing in different environments that is going to elevate them. Because we have to, I mean, I say we, the U.S. has to play the higher caliber teams.
And it's not just the U.S. It's the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, three teams who will not have to go through the qualifying process for 2026. We'll still be involved in these Nations League things, but it's very clear that after this Nations League, like qualification will take center stage, especially after Copa America next summer. And we won't be a part of that. So I think you've said this many times, like we've got to find ways to play good teams. And so not being bogged down with these CONCACAF minnows, for lack of a better term, allows us to go play. I mean, because even if it's just a friendly against Chile, that's a fantastically better opponent than Grenada. Even if it's a friendly against South Korea, that's a better opponent than Cuba or Barbados.
Yeah, and I anticipate that we'll see the U.S. have many matches against South American teams. I mean, they've done the last cycle. We saw pretty much them run through all of them, and any of those opponents are going to be helpful for them to play those. And I'm excited for that because when this first Nation League first started, it was just like, okay, just, you know, I understand why it's valuable for the lower teams, but for the U.S. in Mexico, Costa Rica, Canada, it's not really. It's not overly helpful for them. They need that, you know, for them to grow and be more competitive on the national stage. You know, they're going to need to play against those better quality, you know, nations.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited that there is something. I'm also excited we don't have to play the small teams and that we can come in at the quarterfinal. We get two games that really matter. And then hopefully that qualifies us for the finals, which will be in March of 2024. So March of 2024 could be really fun. You've got, you know, the CONCACAF Women's Gold Cup. Hopefully, we're in a final winning a trophy there. And then hopefully the men's team is in the final of the Nations League, winning a trophy there. That's fun. That's good. A good month of soccer, in my opinion. What has not been a great month of soccer, it's been a couple bad months, is the just overall cloud that has been over U.S. soccer since right before the, maybe right after the Wales game, involving Gio Reyna and his family. So if you've lived under a U.S. soccer Twitter rock, if you will, or any U.S. soccer news, essentially what happened was Greg Berhalter communicated in some way, shape, or form. We're not entirely sure the exact phrasing or framing, but communicated to Gio Reyna, a very young, talented player, that he would not play a significant role, these were Gio's words, in the World Cup that we just finished. Again, I don't think Gio was specifically quoting Greg from that. That was just how he relayed how he felt about it. And so in response, Gio was slacking off a lot in training, not putting forth a full effort, to the point where it was actually harming the team, because as we've all been a part of a practice, like, you have to go out and give your all in practice because you're trying to make your team better. And Gio being not doing that, rattled a lot of people the wrong way. There are a lot of people whose feathers got out of place because he was not giving his all. Greg and his coaching staff apparently talked to him about it. It doesn't reported. I think this was also debunked, that the players basically helped him vote to see if he would stay or not. The point is that Gio had to face his teammates and his coaching staff, apologize in one way, shape, or form. From all reports after that, he picked himself back up, started playing a lot better, and as we all know, played a full half of soccer in a must-win knockout round game when we were down 2-0. So I think, if I'm going to editorialize and speak for all of us, I think we all agree that, like, the Gio problem at the World Cup, just the specific, hey, he wasn't trying too hard, was resolved. Am I speaking out of turn for you all? No, like, it seemed like that part was like, we're fine, we're moving on.
Yeah, I would agree. Teammate said it. I think Gio apologized.
However, what seems to have been a problem is that, and I don't blame Gio for communicating this to his parents, because, like, I would say this to my parents as well, told his mom and dad that, hey, I'm probably not going to get a lot of playing time. Problem is, his dad is a former captain of U.S. soccer, the U.S. men's national team, his mom a former U.S. women's national team player, and two people who are very well connected to the Berhalters, as has been reported. They've been friends for almost 40 years now, Greg and Claudio. And it seems that Claudio, during the World Cup, was texting the general manager at the time, Brian McBride, was texting the sporting director, Ernie Stewart, not necessarily threatening them at this point, but making some sorts of threats about Greg, having information about Greg, about something that he had done, certainly expressing very much a lot of frustration to both of these gentlemen about his son not playing. And then after the World Cup had ended, Greg gives a speech at a leadership summit where he mentions the scenario from the World Cup about a player who wasn't really working all that hard and how they had to deal with it. And those words were somehow leaked, basically. I mean, I don't think he thought he was on the record at all, but they got out. And anyone with the soccer brain knew that he was talking about the Gio Reyna saga. And so after that happened, Gio's mom, Danielle, reportedly called Ernie Stewart and threatened to reveal some very incriminating, I think is the word that she was probably trying to do, information about Greg. And it turns out that Greg, had a physical altercation with his wife where he kicked her. Certainly something that, though it happened 30 years ago, is a bad thing to have happened, and not something you want your coach to have. So all of this is a summary of the report that came out this past week. Alston and Bird, a law firm here in Atlanta, released their report. There's a lot to read through. I don't want to go through all of it, but that is the backstory. But I think the big takeaways are kind of threefold. One is that the investigation was first started to investigate the story of Greg physically assaulting his wife, then girlfriend, now wife. That resolution basically said that, yes, this happened. Greg wasn't hiding any details from the initial, reports that they got. And their conclusion is that there is no legal barriers, basically, to U.S. Soccer or anyone from hiring Greg Berhalter. So let's talk about that real quick. I mean, Caleb, the report or the statement that U.S. Soccer put out is Greg Berhalter remains a candidate to serve as head coach of the men's national team. Now, that does not mean he will be, but do you think it's fair that he is still now a candidate for this job?
I mean, I think regardless of whether he is or isn't, I think legally, if you say he's a candidate, you're trying to CYA. That way, if he's not hired or rehired, they can say, no, look, we said you were still a candidate. Everything, it's out there. We were, there's so much to it now. I think they had to come out and say that, mm-hmm. right? Realistically, I don't think they're going to be going in that direction. I feel like if that was the case, this would have all been a bit more swift, swiftly yeah. handled, I guess you could say. It's embarrassing for the Federation. It's like the fact that we're talking about, apparently you talked about it in the very beginning of the podcast where, I'm a youth coach, high school coach, dealing with parents. It's crazy. Dealing with a 10-year-old parent is one thing. Dealing with an 18-year-old parent is crazy. Dealing with an 18 or 19 or 20-year-old parent when your child is a professional is a completely different thing. Mm-hmm. It's insanity. And yet here we are. Like, this is our Federation. This is what we're dealing with. This is our truth. This is our lives at the moment. As far as U.S. soccer fans, U.S. soccer officials, U.S. soccer players, U.S. soccer coaches, like, it's crazy that this is even happening. But no, I don't see any, I don't see how it's realistic mm-hmm. that they think he will be, or that they're saying that he still is. I don't know how you can go about that after this.
I mean, I agree. I think it's a CYA, Thomas. Do you think this is more them just saying obviously legally we have no reason to not consider him, but I mean, they kind of have to say that.
Yeah. I mean, I think for sure. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, but I will say, I mean, if this doesn't go down, I don't think Greg is replaced, honestly. So I think, I mean, I don't know what was said behind the scenes, but I think that's another reason they have to almost say, look, he's a candidate, because maybe we kind of give him the impression that he was already probably going to be resigned. Cause there was no indication otherwise along the way.
I'm going to pause you right there, because I think that is a very important distinction. It would have been pretty easy for U.S. soccer to have, after the World Cup ended, say, hey, thank you, Greg. Your contract expires January or December 31st, and we'll be moving on after that. That would have been a perfectly acceptable thing for both U.S. soccer and Greg Berhalter to probably have said. But we have this investigation. So to your point, it was like there was no indication that he would have been let go. He probably would have been rehired. I think that is a very fair assumption.
Yeah, and so then when everything comes up, then it's a different conversation. You know, there's a light of that. I mean, it's all tainted. The whole thing is tainted. I mean, and so whatever you think about Greg, whatever, you know, whoever you side with on the whole situation, it stinks for everyone. And I, yes. and so that's, and I, but I think you've got to take that out. You've got to be done with it. You've got to move on. You've got to, yeah. Essentially, you can clear the table. Sporting director, GM, manager, you're gone. Yeah. We're going to bring a whole new group in. And we're gonna start fresh, which I think that in some respects you need to do anyway each cycle. I'm not sure you need to clean their deck for all the, you know.
No, I mean you wouldn't want to get rid of your sporting director every cycle, but yeah.
Right, but I think there's something to be said for that in general. So you know, yeah.
Yeah, I think all three of us were kind of on the like, yeah, thanks, Greg, but like it's time to move on type of thing. Like, yeah, I just genuinely don't like taking a coach into a second cycle. So I would have been perfectly fine with saying, thanks, Greg, we can remember you fondly, but we're moving on. Caleb, I think it's also important to again reiterate that Greg Berhalter is not at all under contract with U.S. Soccer. So Anthony Hudson's interim tag isn't because like Berhalter is suspended, like his contract expired, it has not been picked up. So like, I think that's another kind of one piece to consider, is that he is not at all like legally bound to U.S. Soccer right now. But also, as Tom has pointed out, like no sporting director, no GM. I agree with you that it kind of just feels like Greg shouldn't be rehired, because there's almost too many good reasons to not hire him.
Exactly. I mean, he would have to be rehired.
And not retained, rehired.
Exactly, rehired. And for all the reasons you just stated, I mean, we're not even talking about soccer, you know?
Yeah.
I just, there's no way. Now, you know, I say this all the time. Now that we've said all this, sure enough, in a week from now, there's going to be an announcement, Greg Berhalter rehired. But I don't see it. I really don't. I don't know who, like if you asked me to pull out a name right now, who do you think couldn't even like, I mean, it's already come out that a lot of things, a lot of the rumors, like, oh, this person, Zidane, turned us down. And then they're like, oh, yeah, Zidane wasn't even asked, right? Like, we hear all these contradictory reports, and, like, I don't even know what to believe anymore. I am ready to see some boys play on the field. Like, I'm excited about that. Like we talked about earlier, I don't think we can judge Anthony Hudson's ability at all as far as coaching this team. But as far as who we want to realistically take over, I got nothing. I don't know. No idea.
Well, and this is where, like, I don't want to get too deep into the coaching question, because there's plenty of time to talk about that, especially after we get a sporting director, which U.S. Soccer has been very clear, Thomas, that we're not hiring a head coach until we have a hire a sporting director. But I think it's very valid to bring up the fact that, like, it's U.S. Soccer does not have the budget to pay for some of the coaches that guys are talking about. Like, Jose Mourinho, as much as I actually think that might not be the worst idea, like I think that'd be kind of fun. He's not coming to U.S. Soccer. He's not taking a $10 to $12 million pay cut to come coach the U.S. men's national team. So like, how much do you think that budget limits us? Or do you think that's just kind of how it is in the international market?
Yeah. I mean, I think the international, it's limiting in some respects. I mean, you know, if you want that big bang of a coach, you know, the name that's going to, again, if you get a name like Jose Mourinho, it changes the scope of it. It puts a different light on it. You know what I mean? Like, there's something to be said for that. Sometimes you can make more out of that financially by just having the name. Of course, he becomes the story and the team is kind of secondary. And we start with Klinsmann. I mean, that's kind of how it is. And so I think
Jose can coach though. So that's why
he's right. But right. And, but you still get to deal with the ego issues and that sort of thing that come with, you know, with the name. And I think 5 million annually is reasonable amount, but you know, I still don't think it's enough to bring in, you know, some of the, you know, of the, because I think a small duration, and that's the thing, like, is, and someone said it, I think maybe you've been said it, Bart, like, you look at, if you said, hey, you're going to coach this team through Copa America and the World Cup for essentially, you know, 2 years of the cycle, you know, you might have an opportunity where you could bring in a big name and do that. But, you know, at this point, you know, you still have a lot more cycle to go. And so that's the thing. You've got to be able to sell that a little bit, because, you know, the people that anyone of that caliber is going to want the juice. They're going to want that, and they're going to want, you know, that attention, and they're going to want that success. And
Jose Mourinho is not screwing around with CONCACAF Nations League.
Well, that's the thing. Right. And that's the thing. And I'm okay. And I'm actually okay with that. If they say this is our plan, and they even say, look, it's not going to happen right now, but Jose Mourinho is coming in, you know, in, you know, March of, you know, June of 2024. Okay.
Fantastic.
I'm fine. I'm fine with that. Go ahead with that. But, you know, clearly state that so the fans know, so we're not playing around with that. But that being said, I think Hudson has, you know, he's got some opportunities. Just, you know, there's some, what's it, Oman and Iran, or, you know.
Yeah, he's clearly being looked at. So.
Yeah. And so for him, I mean, this may be it too. I mean, you know, if he gets those opportunities, you know, why not? I mean, he wants to have that chance. And I think I think he's going to take it if you think it's the right move for him. So.
Caleb, I feel like U.S. soccer, the job is both, it's not a top job, both from a playing standpoint and a money standpoint. But, you know, Greg making $1.8 million, he was in the top 10 of coach, I think top 10 of the coaches earning at the World Cup. That's not bad. But I think it's, you know, to Thomas's point, you're not getting a top guy, but that doesn't mean you can't find a guy who has done well with a lower tier international squad and bring him into the fold. Is that kind of maybe where you think we're going, or what are you envisioning?
I mean, I think financially, like you said, we're limited. It is what it is. I mean, you look what Mexico did hiring Tata, right? They went out and they gave him, what did they give him, like four?
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't making much, much more than Greg, like considerably anyway.
Right, right. But I mean, went out and they spent, and look what they got, right? They got a quick exit from the World Cup. Underperformed all through qualification, you know, and we've talked about this. Like, just because you've had success one place doesn't mean you're going to automatically bring it to another. We see it all the time in the club ranks. We've seen it internationally. You know, you don't know that a person is the right person until they're the right person. And I'm so worried that they're going to overthink things, make a move, and it's not going to be the right way, the right move. I hope I'm wrong. That's just what I see. I think they're going to drag their feet. They're going to hire, you know, the senior directors, the GM, and they're gonna come up with something that they think makes so much sense, and I feel like it's gonna be a train wreck. I'm kind of just sandbagging myself so I don't get my hopes up. I guess I really don't know. The whole thing is so frustrating, but I do, like, to Thomas's point, like, we don't have qualification to worry about, so I guess dragging their feet this cycle really isn't that big of a deal if we really want to talk about it.
I mean, we're not getting a coach until the sporting director, and at that point I think we'll have more clarity on what the vision is. But what we do know, I think, Thomas, is that, and I said this when I was on the Soccer Down Here morning show, is that these weren't patterns of behavior by Claudio. This just seemed to be how he acted toward U.S. soccer, especially since Gio Reyna, his son, started doing things within the actual proper setup of U.S. soccer. He has been relieved as the technical director at Austin. He's still an advisor of some sorts. But, I mean, we've all watched Claudio Reyna play. We remember how great he was at soccer. It kind of sucks that, like, one of the greats, we have a very short list of, like, great U.S. soccer players, and Claudio Reyna's on it. It kind of sucks that a guy of that stature has turned into, I mean, he called U.S. soccer a clown show, and I think he was the one acting like the biggest clown.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand his frustration from a Federation perspective and in his son's perspective, but that's you can't call them a clown. You're still an icon. You know, so
you're still involved with U.S. soccer to some extent.
Well, right. And so and that's the thing, like you look at the Trailblazers. OK, you know, you got Lawless, you got Balboa, you got, Vermees, all these guys that, like, you know, started this thing, got it back on track. And then you have some success in the early, to mid 2000s. And he's part of that. And so people look to him. I mean, honestly, he could have been a candidate for the sporting director. I mean, I jokingly sent a tweet out about that, but like, why not? Like, why not? And so, but now he's tainted the whole thing, and it's just got a bad taste for everyone when it comes to that. And it's frustrating because I just feel we're taking a step back, the Federation is going to live in the insanity that they've been living in for the last 60 years. They continue doing stupid things and getting stupid results, because getting to the round of 16 is great. That's not that needs to be better. We need
it's
to be better.
Not good
better.
Enough.
Yeah. It's not
good enough for next for 2026. That's
right. Going forward, you've got to have better goals. You got a better vision. You've got to get there. No excuses. There's no excuses this time. You don't have to win it. As much as, and I don't think they can at this point, unless they get a, amazing draw in round, but you have to set that standard.
Yeah.
And they've got to reset. They've got an opportunity to reset. So they're going to be smart in how they do that. And I'm hoping they can kind of catch some, a candidate for their director, lightning in a bottle. Maybe Gooch is that, maybe he's not, same with a coach. Maybe you find that lightning in a bottle and they set that standard. They get us back on track.
Yeah, I think the benefit of whoever gets hired as U.S. Soccer Sporting Director or U.S. Soccer, the men's national team coach, it'll be someone who wants the job. For whatever reason, they'll be very motivated and want the job. It won't be just a paycheck for them. And so that gives me some hope. Gentlemen, we've talked a lot. Let's take a very quick break. We'll come back and talk about the March Nations League roster. All right, we're back and ready to talk about the CONCACAF Nations League roster. Anthony Hudson, the interim U.S. men's national team coach, called up 24 guys for this window here in March. We played two games, one against Grenada on the 25th, one against El Salvador on the 28th. I think I got the states right. If I didn't, sue me. Grenada's away, El Salvador at home, 24 guys. Just overall, Thomas, what were your first initial thoughts of this roster?
There are a few missing players, which actually I wasn't overly concerned about because some are injured. But I was excited. It's you have a good blend of your 12 or 13 World Cup players that were critical in that tournament, blended in with kind of some up and coming guys that we haven't seen in a little bit, like McKenzie and Reynolds and Trusty's first time there. I think it's exciting to have that blend. And I think it was a good call, how they blended this roster, because that's what we need to see early on in cycles. We know what we know with a lot of these players.
Yes.
Put these, blend these other guys in to see if they even fit, because they may not. And this is how we have to learn that. I mean, and so to me, I was pretty, I'm sure there's a player too, but ultimately I was pretty happy overall with the roster.
I mean, Caleb, this was a perfect roster, right? You only had one MLS player. What more could you want from a U.S. roster, right?
Well, if you go based on the U.S. men's national team Twitter, thermometer, it's absolute just perfection. There's a couple of MLS guys that I wouldn't mind seeing. We talk about this all the time. I'm not one of those anti-MLS at all. I want our guys to be playing.
You're pro school. Good players.
Exactly. I am pro good players. I don't care where you're playing. Are you good? Can you help us? Then that's what I want. But I mean, overall, it's hard not to be excited. I have, a list of snubs for sure. Guys I'm sad about not seeing. There's obviously some injuries we'll talk about. But overall, I feel like it's hard to complain.
Let's run through it real quick. The goalkeepers, Ethan Horvath, Zach Steffen making a reappearance, and Matt Turner. The three standard guys. I mean, Steffen coming back is a little bit of a surprise, but I don't think it's that. He hasn't been great, but there's not another guy out there who screams, call me up. And if Sean Johnson's your answer, to me, we're turning the page. Does that make sense?
Completely agree.
Yeah. Thomas, I think the defender is also fairly straightforward. There's a couple that we'll talk about that could have been there, but Serginho Dest, Mark McKenzie coming in from Genk, Tim Ream, Brian Reynolds, the young right back from Westerlo in Belgium, Anthony Robinson, Miles Robinson coming back from an Achilles tear for Atlanta United, Joe Scally from Borussia Mönchengladbach, and then Austin Trusty from Birmingham City. So Trusty, McKenzie, Robinson, maybe not the top guys in the fullback and the center back depth chart, but it's nice to see them, I feel like, especially when Chris Richards probably not 100% fit. It seems to be why he wasn't left or why he wasn't here. But those three guys are curious.
Yeah, I mean, I said that Trusty, you know, he's been doing well, and I think he deserves to have, you know, a look.
Yeah.
In general, I just think that's Miles Robinson is a little surprising only because he is coming off the injury. I love Miles Robinson before the injury. It sounds like he's only going to play in one of the matches anyway to keep his load.
Hudson basically said they don't feel like he can play more than one match, which is fine by me as an Atlanta fan.
Yeah, so I like that move too. And McKenzie's been playing great. I mean, he deserves it as well. So it's, and obviously we know how Reams been playing. So he's definitely, you know, on there, but you know, I mean, they're you know, slim on their reserves. I would have maybe liked to see CCV on this, but we'll
talk about him in a little bit. Cause I don't know if we know answers about that, but 8 defenders for a 24 man roster. I'm good. Midfielders, 6 of them, Brendan Aaronson, Johnny Cardozo coming up from Internacional, Luca De La Torre, Weston McKennie, Yunus Musa, and coming back from January camp, Alan Senora, who is now playing for Juarez in Liga MX. The shock, I think, is that there's no Tyler Adams. He's obviously, as we learned today, injured, pulled his hamstring of some sort. But other than that, I mean, I feel like this is a fairly straightforward midfield group. I do think Senora made a good enough impression in January camp to be called back, and I think that's a little bit Hudson making his own kind of like decisions, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm certainly glad Acosta's not on this list for himself,
so. Yeah, who, you know, could have been called up, but he's not. And then the forwards, 7, Taylor Booth from Utrecht. I think that's the one that most people really wanted to see, who has been playing really well in the Netherlands. Daryl DK from West Brom in the English Championship. Ricardo Pepi from Groningen, Christian Pulisic from Chelsea, Gio Reyna from Borussia Dortmund, Tim Weah from Lille, and the new guy, Alejandro Zendejas, or as he's listed on this roster, Alex Zendejas from Club America. So Zendejas getting a call back as well. Look, I think the big thing here is there's no Josh Sargent. You're getting Pepi and DK. They've been hot recently. I also don't know if it matters, Caleb, that Josh Sargent isn't here.
I mean, you know me. I'm a big Josh Sargent guy. Definitely wanted to see him. I think the fact that he's just kind of recently, what, in the last couple of weeks, come back fully healthy, he's probably played a lot into it. Because, I mean, before the injury, he was hot. He was banging in goals, playing super, super well. I feel like he would probably have been, you know, written in pen with how well he was playing. So you got to think that probably played a role in that.
But DK and Pepi, Thomas, like, they've been hot. And Pepi, I think we all agree, was a very big snub from the World Cup team. I think, in obviously hindsight's 2020, but probably should have brought him. DK has been a guy who's always been on the periphery, and now he kind of gets his chance to shine. We have 2 strikers, 2 games. You got to think they're probably going to split time. So this is a good opportunity for both DK and Pepi.
It really is. I'm excited to see both of them. I mean, they both were, you know, obviously not part of the World Cup roster. And again, it's that next phase of bringing these guys in, you know, even, you know, we know what Sargent provides, right? And I love Sargent, to be very clear. I think at the moment he's, you know, he's our number one striker in a must-win game. But DK and Pepi, you know, I think they're both in good form right now and can you know, Pepe's 20 years old. Like, just not forget that. Yeah. Like, that's you know,
Sargent's much, not much older, and it's not like,
yeah, I mean, so these strikers
not older either, you know,
right? So sometimes with a young striker pool, you're gonna have to take the hot hand and you know, get these guys exposure. And I think I like the move by Hudson to bring these guys in. You only bring in two, so you know, they're both gonna get their opportunities, to play. So,
I mean, look. There's a lot of newer names. There's a lot of guys who I think people are very excited for. I am personally the most excited about Miles Robinson just because, again, as an Atlanta fan, it hurt me personally and physically to see him get hurt last year because I think he was a shoe-in to make the World Cup squad. I really do believe that. Obviously, I'm glad to just see him back. I hope he continues to improve. I still think, despite what USMNT Twitter thinks, he's a very good center back. I don't think he's a starter for me necessarily anymore because, again, Tim Ream is playing as, like, an insanely talented – like, he's a god at this point now. You've also got a guy like Chris Richards. But for me, Miles Robinson was the one I was most excited. But, Caleb, was there anyone else that you're, like, super excited that they're on this roster?
I mean, to talk about Miles for a second, I think – you're right. Ream is playing out of his mind, and you definitely reward him for it. But if you're looking to the future, how long can he sustain it, right? And I think Richards and Robinson could be a nasty pair. And I tweeted it earlier. Miles Robinson's got 20 caps, 3 goals to his name as a defender, which is a better clip than Sergino Dest. The guy's a weapon, and he's a shutdown defender. People want to give him crap simply because he is in MLS. If he was playing in any league in Europe, not a single bit of hate would come his way. The guy can play, period. So, yeah, I was devastated for him. Really good to see him back. To Thomas's point with Pepe, you know, talking about the snub with the World Cup, that was probably the hardest one. So to get him back in the fold quick, soon, let him know you are part of the plans, I think is extremely important. And he, you know, I don't care when it is, I'm always excited to watch Yunus Musa play. That kid, just, he puts a smile on my face every time he takes the field. I love the way he plays, everything about his game, and I cannot wait to see him score a freaking goal.
I know. We need to get him one. Thomas, we talked about Taylor Booth. You mentioned that you're glad Acosta isn't here. Does that mean you're excited to see Johnny play? Because he's probably going to play that sixth position a lot.
I am. I mean, I think Johnny, he's been doing well down in Brazil. I think, you know, he, if everything, you know, if all the rumors are true, he was, you know, very close, you know, to making the World Cup, you know, if another player had gotten injured or something along the way. So he was on the cusp, and he's, 21 years old right now? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I think this is his time. This is his opportunity to get in there. And I think we've seen him progress, you know, with the national team. Over his most recent, you know, matches. And I'm excited to see him on the team. And, you know, again, same with Booth, same with Zendejas, you know, no Morse, no Areola. I mean, it's the next, you know, generation coming in there. And I think that's what excites me the most about this is I want to see some of these, you know, younger guys, you know, and again, Zendejas is kind of a, you know, a bridge type of player. He's going to be here, you know, he's 25 years old. He's going to be here for this cycle and for sure. And, you know, if he can continue producing, you know, who knows for the next cycle, but you've got to bring in a, you know, this 21-year-old Booth, you know, he's been showing well. It's time to give that, you know.
And it seems like we saw a lot of those retreads in January, which was, I think for a lot of people, disheartening because it is time to move on. And I don't mean like move on necessarily from them, but like a lot of the known quantities that we saw in January, and I'm talking Morris, Roldan, Acosta, even Areola, we know what they're going to give us. We didn't need to see them in a January camp to prove anything to us. I mean, good or bad, they weren't going to prove anything to me. So it's good to see actual new names on the roster. And even a guy like Johnny, who, like you said, I mean, we've seen him play before, but it's like, give him the opportunity and give him the minutes that you have had zero problem giving to a guy like Kellen Acosta, who hasn't proven to be that much better. You know, he just seems like he's better because he's a little bit more experienced. And Caleb, to bring back a point you made earlier, you can't have experience until you get that experience. So you have to give them that experience. You know, and I think a lot of this is, we don't know where some of these guys are. We do know that, you know, Adams is hurt. Tillman seems to be hurt. Richards is probably not 100%, I think, is kind of what we've all landed on, is he's just not fully fit. But, you know, there's no CCV on here. And he's not, to our knowledge, injured. You know, Georgi Mihailovic, not here. I mean, are there anyone, Thomas, that you're like a little shocked? I mean, who's on your snub list? Let's just call them what they are. Who's on your snub list?
I'm going to have to. I mean, barring injury, I mean, Richards is the only one that directly comes to mind on that. Like, I just think he may not be in full form, and that's, you know, I guess kind of where you define the snub on that. But I'm not seeing a lot here. I'm not upset about the roster. In general, I just, the CCV one is maybe the other one. You know what I mean? Like, other than that, like, I'm very happy with what we saw here. I'm sure there's, you know, there's a reason for most of them, but I think it's, you know, it's kind of a split group from what we saw at the World Cup. And so, yeah, I don't have one really, you know, that's really angering me. CCV is probably the one that just stands out of this group.
Caleb, your snubs?
I mean, yeah, again, Chris Richards, probably some sort of health thing there. There's no reason to bring him in to risk further injury. He's just now getting healthy again. Just let him be at his club, continuing to carve out a role there. I'm assuming that's the issue there. But yeah, EPB, CCB, Georgi Mihailovic, Kevin Paredes, Jonathan Gomez. There's a lot of guys there. Josh Sargent, right, we talked about before.
Yeah,
a lot of guys I'd love to see. But to Thomas's point, you know, we're nitpicking there, because overall we've got a really good roster. You know, if those guys are snubs, well, who are you taking out, right? I want to see Taylor Booth. Yeah. I really, really do. I'm excited about this kid. He did have a little knock. He came out of the game last weekend or something. Obviously, it was minor. But that kid has been bawling out of his mind. I want to see him. Zendejas, I'll take him all day over a retread. Johnny Cardoso and Alan Sonora, to me, are the ones where I'm like, you know, okay, let's give him an opportunity. Every single time I've seen him, I don't get it. I'm not saying they're not talented, but when they're wearing the U.S. shirt, I've not been, you know, wow.
Right.
You know, I'd rather play, based on what I have seen in a U.S. kit, I would rather see Kellen Acosta than Johnny Cardoso. And I'm not saying
I'm with you there.
Yeah, I'm not saying Acosta's better than Cardoso, because that's what people are going to – that's what they want to hear. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying for the U.S., that is what I've seen with my eyes. Now, maybe he's been young. Maybe he's been nervous. Like you said, like I've said, can't get experience until you have it. Let him play. If this window, if he still doesn't look good against these, you know, I don't want to say.
Granada, one of them is a bad team. They're
yes,
bad team.
Yes. Thank you.
Like El Salvador is a competitive team. Grenada yes, is.
Exactly. Which is why I don't want to say cupcakes, but they're not the greatest team for playing. And if he still doesn't look the part, then I mean, I'm done, because at this point he would have had.
He's had multiple opportunities. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, yeah, I would say plenty of opportunity to show what he can do. So I'm excited to watch him for that point. Show me what you can do, kid.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing for Johnny, for me personally, is that he plays a position where we need to find a backup, because the backup can't just be Kellen Acosta again.
Right.
This is about raising that floor. Adams is our six. Acosta has always been on the roster because he's the only guy who can, you know, reliably play the backup six. I've been told he's able to play more advanced attacking midfield positions. I have never seen him actually do that effectively. But, you know, you've got to find that backup to Tyler Adams. And Johnny seems to be the only guy right now who's doing that. But there are others. I mean, we still haven't does U.S. soccer know that Keaton Parks exists? You know, those are questions I have. But look, I think overall the starters are the starters, right? And no one's probably going to – no one who would play the six in this camp is replacing Tyler Adams as the starter. You know what I'm saying? So even with the center backs, I think one thing that I do look at is I don't think Richards or CCV are going to be affected that much, their position, by the center backs here. Right. The fullbacks are pretty much who I would have called up. I mean, Brian Reynolds, a little bit of a surprise, but Thomas, it's not like he's, I mean, he has been improving a lot now that he's at a club that is kind of at his level. Right. But you're still looking at Robinson and Dess as your starters, most likely. I mean, maybe Scally can like overtake that. I would like to see Scally get a full 90 in one of these games, but I just don't think any of these guys are replacing the top end guys. So the question I think comes back to who are you most excited to just see how they can help the team, right? That I think that's the goal here.
Well, you know, I wouldn't say I'm a fan of Johnny. I just see his potential again. He's 21 years old, so he's still
with you.
You know, he's still there. So from an age perspective, and he does seem to be improving because he, you know, he's thrown in there very young. But I actually don't think he's going to start. I actually think we're going to see probably like Musa, Aronson, McKinney midfield. Honestly,
really,
that's what I'm thinking. Honestly,
I don't think the defensive midfielder matters against Grenada.
No, I don't think it does either. but the way they've been playing Musa there at the World Cup, he was playing a lot more. Back. He wasn't attacking as much. And again, mind you, it was
the World Cup. De La Torre might get a look at the six.
Well, exactly. So I think you might see more of those guys get that opportunity over than Cardoso. Honestly. Or Sonora for that matter. I think they're going to, those guys are very skilled. And I think it's important to see them, in that sixth role to see if they can actually, you know, play it and produce, yeah. You know, with the players around them. Cause if you put Aronson and McKinney there with, you know, either one of them, I think we'll have a good opportunity to see that. So, but that's my thought on that. Yeah. So, and I think that you have to do those little things too, when you're having these opportunities, you know, to get this group together. You've got to try different things out to see what works. The stakes, you know, they're high, but they're not like you have some room for error where you can.
We only have the only result that matters is that we have to beat El Salvador. Literally, the Grenada match doesn't, like, we could lose. We shouldn't. But like, if you go out there and you're like, you could play the U-20 team in Grenada. It doesn't matter because that result doesn't matter at all as long as we beat El Salvador. So whatever. Real quick, though, I do want to point out, like, you know, we mentioned Paredes. I think we've mentioned, you mentioned Gomez, Gaga, Slonina. Like, they're most likely going to be in a U-20 camp. So I do think people need to kind of pump the brakes a little bit on that. Like, now is not the time to put them in the senior national team camp when they have to prepare for a U-20 World Cup in May. That is their focus, and that's fine. But, you know, we have Hudson, who called up 24 players. I think some people wondered why there weren't more called up, but I don't know. I mean, you only get 23 on the match day squad. You're talking about two matches. It seems very clear that Hudson is going to rotate a lot between both games. Caleb, do you think it's going to be like straight up like the 11s are switching, or who do you think is definitely not playing both games? Like, is Christian Pulisic playing 45 minutes total? Is Gio playing like 30 minutes total? Like, what do you think that squad rotation looks like?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see Pulisic going 180 minutes. You know, there's no
chance. I barely see him going 90, to be quite honest.
There's no reason to do that. You know, get him a couple minutes here and there, and if you don't need them, there's no reason to push it. I'm in the mind of trying to see what these players can do. Like a Cardoso, you talk about Tyler Adams, here's a great opportunity for someone to take the backup six. And I honestly, look, don't get me wrong, I hope Cardoso succeeds. I want him to succeed. I just haven't seen it, and I'm skeptical. But I hope, you know, I hope he gets 90 minutes to show what he can do. To your point, like I said, I think it's going to be heavy rotation. There's no reason to run your stars into the ground. And I don't think it's a bad thing. I think they're very winnable games, even with the heavy rotation. Then again, we saw heavy rotation versus Panama, and it didn't go our way.
But again, the Panama match still meant something. Like this Grenada match, I'm telling you, it literally doesn't mean anything. And
it's Panama, different. It's very different. Yeah. Yes.
Thomas, I mean, we talk about rotation. I don't want to speak for y'all, so I'll let you answer this. But like, the best 11 needs to play against at home, El Salvador at home, right? Like that's where your best 11 is.
Well, for sure. I mean, I think for a couple of reasons. One, obviously, you have to win that game, and that's the critical game. But two, I mean, I think, you know, I don't know. I'm sure the Federation thinks about this a little bit. It's like, you know, you do want to kind of feature your stars and you're at home too a little bit, you know. So I think there's something that goes to that. But I mean, I expect honestly, like, you know, Aronson and McKinney to play, you know, a lot of minutes, you know, and Ream and Robinson, who are playing every week. I think those players can play. So I think when you see Pulisic, I mean, maybe he either starts or comes off the bench, you know, against Grenada, or doesn't play at all. I mean, because he just hasn't had the minutes, so you can't run him out there, I don't think, you know, irresponsibly, you know, in these games. But I think the strikers, I think Pepe plays against El Salvador, and I think DK plays against Grenada. I mean, and I think maybe you mix it up a little bit in the midfield. I think guys are going to get the play, because I think, are they still doing five subs? Is that still?
As far as I know.
I think that should still be the same. Yes.
Okay. And so that, you know, that benefits the U.S. because they've got so many players they can rotate in. If it was three, it's a little, yeah. it's a little bit more challenging.
If things are going very badly in Grenada, if things are going terribly in Grenada, which, again, it still doesn't matter. Like, you can easily put new guys in, but like, El Salvador is the game that matters. I think we've all settled. I mean, they've got 5 points. We've got 4 points. Grenada has 1 point. Grenada will be finished with this after they play us. So even if they beat us and we're tied at 4 points, we should, in theory, be able to play El Salvador. And really, we just have to not lose. We can even tie El Salvador at this point. And as long as the goal differential from a Grenada loss isn't that bad, we're fine. I mean, we have a plus five goal differential. They have a plus two goal differential. So we have wiggle room. That's the whole point. Like, the stakes are very low. So Thomas, I mean, like, if El Salvador is your first choice, who from that first choice squad are you saying, yeah, but I still need them to start at Grenada?
Yeah, I think McKinney starts both games. I think probably Aronson does. Okay. You know, the Ream, the defenders, I'm not as concerned.
Robinson
you
has
know.
To play 190 minutes or 80
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, I mean, we could see, we know he can do that. You know, maybe would you give Dets a break? You know, because he hasn't played a lot. Scally, to me, Scally is moving up the charts. You know. He's playing every week.
I'm with you.
You know what I mean? Like, at some point, you got to say, you got to get this guy in here consistently,
yeah.
Either right or left, figure it out. But like, he's moving up the charts, and now you're at the beginning of a cycle as opposed to the end of it. So your excuses are out the window with him. So, you know, I think I want to see more.
I think Scally has to start one of these games.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I just don't think Dest is going to have the legs to do, you know, the full lift on that. And we've seen that anyway. Yeah, in general with Dest, he just doesn't have that.
Do you give Matt Turner both games, or do you even be like, hey, Matt, you're starting El Salvador, but like, we're giving Stefan or Horvath Grenada?
I think you do. I mean, I think you got to start. And that's me. Okay. I think you got to start the cycle.
I'm with you.
Yeah. Because, I mean,
start your number one.
Right. You start your number one, you play your number one. Like, these games matter. Like, if it's a friendly, fine. You split it. I don't care. Like, but I think I want to see Turner continue. And I want to see what, you know, because he still hasn't played a lot with this club. And so I still want to see more from him, because his improvement with his feet, as an example, was great in the little time he had in Arsenal. I want to see more of that. I want to see more of that, you know, at that level, and see what he's, because he is such a, you know, a fascinating study of coming into the whole thing at an older age and just continue to work hard and actually showing improvement along the way. Because, yeah. And so that's kind of why I want to see him. I mean, I'd be fine if they split him, but keepers can play. And I think he should.
Caleb, who's your, like, probably the starter from the El Salvador game that you would still also start in that Grenada game?
Well, I think Thomas kind of talked about it. Like, there's a lot of guys you're going to want to get looks. And with five subs, there's an ability to change a lot. Mm-hmm. So if you're strategic with it, I mean, you can get guys in like the Pulisics and the McKinneys. You can get them in both games and get them minutes. But yeah, defensively, I think if you're going to ride the Ream and then possibly, let's say, Robinson, you're going to push that partnership for a while, then go ahead and get it going. Yeah. You know, for me, the center back pairing is probably the most important partnership anywhere on the field. You know, a lot of times if you've got two, like a double pivot, it's an important partnership, but it's not as important as the center back pairing to me. I think if you could find two guys that just click and gel and play well together, you ride it. And if you set that tone versus Granada, or who cares? I don't care when the light bulb goes off. If two guys click, go for it. So Ream, both games, it's not going to hurt. Again, how much defending is he going to do versus Granada anyways?
And again, you can take him out in Granada, like a 60-minute short look. We're up 2-0. Like,
five subs makes it so easy to make changes there. So I'm not looking for anybody that I need to go. I think with Granada, I wouldn't mind if you went full B choice or B team. To be completely honest with you, that won't bother me. And I don't think it's going to bother the guys as far as a continuity type thing. Because I feel like it's going to be such a weird game anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there are certain positions where you want some continuity. I kind of agree. I would rather just Matt Turner start both games just because why not? I think if you're looking at Ream, if that's your choice to start both games, I think that's fine. Have some solidarity on the back line. And probably Jedi starts both games. Maybe in the midfield, you have Musa or McKinney do both, but I don't think you need both of them going 190. You know, I think there's just a lot that you could possibly do, but I do want that first game to be a chance where we get looks at guys. Like, I want Johnny to start that game because I know he won't have to do a whole lot of defensive midfield work. So let him get in there and figure out his positioning with the rest of the guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, that is a good learning lesson for him. Personally, I would start Scally because I think we're all in agreement. We kind of need to start seeing him. He is playing every week. And I know Sergio Dest is insanely talented. He is. But Scally's playing, and that means a lot. And he's not playing for a scrub team. He's playing for Borussia Mönchengladbach, a team with a very good history in the Bundesliga. So I do want to see Joe Scally. I'm not really that concerned about any other starters in that first game against Granada, but let me see Scally. Any other thoughts about these two games before we get out of here? Caleb, what do you have to say?
I think you got to go in and set the tone early. I want to see goals. You know, I want to see ideas and creativity, and just better overall play in the final third, because I feel like that was something we just didn't see under Berhalter. It was like just a lack of ideas in the final third. You know what I mean? So that's something that if we see improvement there, I'm going to be really excited about. And, you know, then I'll just make a t-shirt that says Hudson for coach or something. I don't know.
Thomas, anything you're looking forward to particularly from these two matches?
Yeah, I'll echo what Caleb said about goals. I think that's going to be important to see that. Build that, start strong, you know, set the tone. But also, you know, Granada's, you know, they are what they are, but I want to see a good road performance. You know what I mean? I don't care, you know, because that's the consistency. We have to see better. I don't care who the opponent is. We can't take it for granted.
Don't leave me waiting till the 60th minute for us to like figure it out. You know, I'm with you. Like, we need to go out there and be like, yo, we're here to win.
Yeah. You know, I want to see a significant 4-goal, 5-goal, you know, victory on the road. Cause that's pretty rare. you know, for the U.S. in general. It's pretty, even in CONCACAF against weak teams.
Oh, yeah.
Because I go back to the Barbados example. U.S. beat them 8-0 at home, and then it was the same window. They won, only 1-0. And yeah. So, I mean, obviously, there's no – I don't have context of who played in each game, but pretty sure it's the same roster, but that's significant. 1-0 to 8, you know, that's
– yeah.
You know, I guess I don't know which one they
got five first. Goals from 23 shots in the first game against Grenada, right? Like, obviously, we expect a slight dip, but like, if we're not getting double digit shots, 15 shots against Grenada, I think that's what we're talking about. It's like you need to be close to what you performed at home.
Well, that's the thing. You and that's, I think we have to start setting that expectation. You know, draws or you know, late victories on the road are not acceptable anymore. We need to, you know, we have a better squad with most of these teams. We have to be able to, you know, show that dominance, you know, yeah, on the roads, you know. So,
well, gentlemen, I thank you for talking so long about all the stuff that we've missed from U.S. soccer in our little hiatus. We've all been busy trying to live lives outside of podcasting and soccer, but I'm glad we got to get back together. Thomas, you can follow him at U.S. Keeper on Twitter. You can follow Caleb at USMNT Corner. Both guys who love to share their opinions on U.S. soccer and try to be as measured as possible, I will say. They're not out there trying to make hot takes that aren't worth making. So I appreciate both of you all for being here. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And again, you can subscribe to the show by subscribing to Soccer Down Here and get all the content that comes out there. You'll hear my voice weekly on Wednesdays during that morning show. And support the show at Soccer For Us Pod on Twitter and buymeacoffee.com/soccerforuspod if you feel like contributing. So again, thanks everyone for listening. I'm Bart. I'm out.